If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Where To Go. I'm James Atkinson, Senior Brand Manager at DK Eyewitness.
And I'm Zoe Rutland, Senior Editor at DK Eyewitness.
Welcome to Where To Go, where every fortnight we find out more about the world's favourite travel destinations with the people who know those places best. And Zoe, first time hosting.
Yes, first time.
Yep.
My foray into hosting.
So it's great to have you join us.
Yeah, great to be here.
And we explained a little bit, listener, that during this season, you're going to hear a couple of different voices from the DK Eyewitness team preparing for the moment when me and Lucy have to take a little bit of time off. But Zoe, I've wanted you to host for quite a long time now, so it's great to have you on. And I believe this episode is going to be quite close to a project you're working on at the minute, right?
Yeah, so I'm currently working on an update to our second edition to Be More Japan.
Yes.
So I've got good grounding, but I'll learn a lot from this. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, so if you didn't take from that where we're going to this episode, we're going to Japan, big surprise. It's very exciting. I've never actually been. I've always wanted to go, very much top of my bucket list. How about you, Zoe?
Yeah, never been, exactly the same, top of my bucket list. Yeah, so much there.
Yeah, so I mean, and it's going to be really tricky to get everything about Japan into one podcast episode.
Yeah,
highly recommend looking out for the new edition of Be More Japan in March next year.
Yeah, publishes in March.
Our guest today is Todd Fong. So Todd has worked, is working with you right now on updating that book.
Yeah,
and he's an expert in all things Japan.
Yeah.
So should we get to it?
Yeah, let's get into it.
So born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area, Todd Fong is a Japan-based travel writer, photographer, editor, and creative consultant. Recently, he has been hard at work with us at DK Eyewitness updating our beautiful book, Be More Japan. So new to the Where To Go podcast, welcome Todd.
Hello.
Hello, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Hi Todd, great to see you.
Thank you.
So as usual, we're going to begin with learning a little bit more about our guest Todd, followed by his all-important recommendations of where to go and insider knowledge of Japan. And finally, we'll hear his advice for planning the perfect trip.
So Todd, you've been living in Tokyo since 2014. Can you tell us a little bit about what brought you to the city initially?
Sure. I first came to Tokyo actually to do some work with a Japanese Christian church. But about 5 years ago, I was offered some freelance opportunities to do some travel writing and photography for an English-speaking audience. And that opportunity has really given me the chance to explore Japan in a really deep way. Maybe I've seen more of Japan than many local Japanese people have, and it's been a real privilege to do that.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, what a country to explore as well. And what's kind of made you stay since then?
Travel writing and traveling keeps me busy about 6 months of the year, and I do some other work for the company that I'm working with as well in the off season. I think part of the reason that we stay are the same reasons that many people who come to Japan to live stay. Mm-hmm. It's a country that has a great infrastructure. There's just a feeling of safety living in Japan. Of course, Japan has tremendously good food. And the people, the people of Japan are just really wonderful people. But I'm also driven by a curiosity, a really intense curiosity about Japan, about its rich history and culture. And as long as there's places I haven't been in Japan, places that I want to see, I just never going to want to leave. It's just that kind of place for me.
Yeah, of course. That makes sense. How did you find the transition from the US? Were you able to assimilate quickly and find a community in Japan?
Well, to be honest, I think Japan can be difficult to adapt to for Americans. Mm. And particularly if you're coming to a large city like Tokyo, which like many large cities in the world, it can feel a bit cold and maybe difficult to make connections initially. And especially if you're an introvert like I am, making a meaningful relationships, I think, takes some time. Mm. Fortunately for us, we had a kind of instant community through the Christian church that we were connected with here in Tokyo. And also, I had made some online friendships with some Japanese photographers through a website. And almost as soon as we got here, we met up and started to do things together. And so I had that community as well, which I think was very helpful for the transition.
And did you experience any culture shocks when you moved over as well? Was there anything that kind of completely surprised you about Japan?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think in terms of culture, American culture and Japanese culture are almost polar opposites. I mean, if we think about, you know, your stereotypical American, we're pretty brash and very individualistic, whereas the Japanese are much more reserved and really considerate about how they impact the people around them. And so I think after 10 years here, I really notice the differences a lot more. For example, if I'm riding the train here in Tokyo, when you get on the train, it's very quiet. And that's because Japanese people, they don't tend to speak on the train. They don't talk on their phones. They talk quietly to each other if they need to talk to each other. So when like a group of American tourists boards the train, like I can hear them like from one end of the train to the other. And so I might say something to my wife like, you know, Americans are really loud. And my wife will say, you know, you said that pretty loud too. So I'm still adapting to the culture here.
Yeah.
Thank you for introducing us, Todd. We're going to move on to your best things to do.
To kick things off, Todd, we're going to ask you to give us a quick fire tour of Japan. So we're going to name a few categories and you have to suggest just one thing to do for each category. Are you ready?
Ready.
Great. So first things, what's your favorite view?
I'm going to say the view of the Seto Inland Sea, which is the sea between Japan's main island of Honshu and the smaller island of Shikoku.
Oh.
It's really quite a breathtaking view. If you can imagine this calm blue sea that's dotted with hundreds of small islands, and some of these islands are connected by these beautifully designed bridges that connect Shikoku with the main island. And I think one of the best ways to see this view is by cycling on the Shimanami Kaido, which connects the city of Onomichi in Hiroshima Prefecture and Imabari in Ehime Prefecture on Shikoku Island. And it's about a 70-kilometer cycling ride. And it's probably best done in 2 days to enjoy it. And there are plenty of modest accommodations where you can stay along the cycling route. And it's just nice. Really an enjoyable journey.
Sounds lovely. We're all for scenic journeys here at DK Witness.
Absolutely. And all for cycling journeys too. So, moving on, and this might be a very, very tricky one, Todd. I'm going to allow you to have two options of this if you want, but your favorite thing to eat?
Yeah, I always get asked this and it's always so difficult, but I think I'm going to default back to what my favorite was when I first arrived, and I'm going to say ramen.
Yes, of course, yeah. Of course. Has to
the
be
The reason
done.
Why I say ramen is ramen, there's just so many different types of ramen, and so many shops. In Tokyo alone, there are over 10,000 ramen shops. And there's actually a magazine called Ramen Walker, which is dedicated to ramen aficionados to help them find the best spots. And so
that's amazing.
That's the extent of ramen in Tokyo. It really bothers me when we have friends visiting from America and they go out to eat ramen and they choose these chain stores, which they have shops already available in America. And it's like, why did you do that? You know, there's just so many ramen shops you could choose in Tokyo. It's, Tokyo alone has three Michelin starred ramen shops, the only three in the world.
Wow.
And then there are, of course, so many different types of broths. There's the shoyu soy sauce, shio salt, tonkotsu pork broth. There's miso. And there's many styles of noodles, the thin ones, the wavy noodles, thicker noodles. And there's even noodles that you dip in sauce called tsukemen, which is actually a very popular way to eat ramen in the summer.
So I'm going to allow you to, I'm sort of going to do a special version of this quick fire round just for you, Todd, and ask you if you can name just one ramen you should eat in Japan.
Just one ramen.
Yeah, it can be one particular ramen in one particular place.
Wow. This is a tough one. So there was a favorite shop that I had out on the coast in Chiba Prefecture. It was run by a guy who really enjoyed surfing.
Oh, cool.
And the broth was, I want to say it was a pork-based broth, but it was flavored with asari clams, which are these little clams. And the flavor was just rich. And the broth was, it was a milky color from the pork. But the trouble with this particular restaurant was that the guy liked to surf so much. He was rarely at the restaurant to make the ramen, so we would drop by the restaurant and it would be closed and we would never know when he was going to be there, so it was always hit or miss. So
you just have to watch the waves
see
if he's out there and say, come on.
Haven't been out there in a while, but I still dream of that place because he made such a great ramen.
Oh, it's nearly lunchtime here.
I know.
I can speak for us all and say that we're very hungry now. So moving on to drinking, Todd, what's your favorite thing to drink?
Okay, well, I'm actually not able to drink a lot myself. I get the Asian flush quite easily.
We can drink soft drinks or, you know.
Well, I'm sure many of your listeners enjoy a nice adult beverage. So so I'm going to go with Japanese craft gin, actually.
Mm. Ooh.
So gin distilling, it's quite a recent development, I think, in Japan. It's become popular perhaps on the heels of the success of Japanese whiskey. So we're seeing a lot of gin distilleries popping up all over the country, as well as whiskey distilleries that are adding gin to their product lineups. And one of the wonderful things about Japanese craft gin is that many of the companies are really putting their own spin on the gins. They're using very unique botanicals. So I just got back from Hiroshima last week and I visited a Sakurao distillery in Hiroshima City. And they have a gin where they're using 17 different botanicals that are distinct to the Hiroshima area.
Wow, that's great.
Oh, wow.
It's really amazing what they're doing there. And they are also using a plant. I think your listeners might be familiar with the UNESCO World Heritage Site, Miyajima Island. It has a famous shrine on it.
Yep.
And so they're using this plant that grows on this island and that they've been using to make incense for hundreds of years. And so if you come to Japan, you know, and you're a gin lover, I think you can really discover some unique forms of gin. And I encourage people to come and try them out.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Fantastic answer, Todd. I had no idea at all that gin was big in Japan.
No.
So moving on, and this might be quite a tricky one as well, but what would your perfect sort of day activity look like in Japan? So something you could just do in one day.
Yeah, well, I guess recently I've been inspired by my fellow American and writer Craig Mode. And so Craig is famous for taking long walks.
Yep.
I don't take walks quite as long as him, you know, 30 or 40 kilometers a day. But I guess instead of taking a train between locations in Tokyo, I might try to walk instead.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what I found is that walking in the big city like Tokyo, you really discover details that you cannot see otherwise.
Yeah.
Mm. And I've just discovered so many restaurants and shops and galleries that I would have never seen before if I had not walked from place to place. Tokyo has some really great walking neighborhoods, so I'm going to make some recommendations.
Yeah, go for it.
First, I would recommend Yanaka, which is an area of Tokyo that still has an atmosphere which we call the Showa era here in Japan, which is about 50 to 60 years ago.
Okay.
The shops are very cute and owned by, mom and pops. And the prices are quite low for foods and things like that. It's a really fun area to explore and get a sense of what Tokyo might have been like, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Shimokitazawa is kind of a neighborhood that's home to artists and musicians. It's very popular with young people now just to hang out, but there are also a lot of vintage clothing shops and things of that nature, great bars and restaurants as well.
Cool.
And if you're looking for something a little more upscale, maybe Omotesando, which is kind of a mix of modern architecture and fashion boutiques, and also a great collection of many of Tokyo's best cafes.
Excellent. Very, very good answer. So
yeah.
I think you've basically got three different itineraries around Tokyo
yeah.
there, Mr. That's three for the price of one. Excellent.
And our last quickfire, do you have a favorite museum or gallery? What's the one that you would suggest visitors go to?
I think one of the best galleries, and I don't know if we can call it a gallery per se, but more like a collection of galleries, is the what we would call the art islands of the Shikoku Islands. Mm. So the Shikoku Island actually made the top of the list of places to travel to in 2022, recommended by, it rhymes with Only Planet.
you could absolutely say Lonely Planet, that's fine.
Well, yeah, but so anyway, the Shikoku was at the top of the list in 2022, but of course, Japan was actually closed to foreign tourism until October.
Yeah, of course.
So it was kind of a waste, and I think a lot of people didn't get to go there.
Mm.
But Kagawa Prefecture on Shikoku Island has many small islands that have these little art galleries. Naoshima Island, I guess, is one of the more famous ones. It has many, many galleries on it. And so you can make, a several-day trip just island hopping to these different islands off of the coast of Shikoku and just enjoying these many small galleries.
What kind of art can you find inside them?
A lot of the art is very modern
and
it's also very international. So you'll find art from artists all over the world. And I think many of your listeners may be familiar with the art of Yayoi Kusama.
Of course.
Many of her art pieces are on display out there on the islands as well.
Great.
Her giant pumpkin with the polka dots, I think, is one of the most famous pieces.
Yeah, I think we spotlight her in Be More Japan, don't we?
Yeah, in the first book, there's like a big spread with
yeah.
the pumpkin.
Yeah, that's right.
Like all over it as well. So if you're interested in reading more, listeners, you can find it there. All right, Todd, there's some brilliant answers to the quickfire round there. Some amazing places to go, and it really gave us a bit of a feel for Japan as well. I'm going to blow it a bit further open now and ask you just to give us some highlights in Japan that any listener just shouldn't miss, like if they were planning a trip tomorrow, as producer Julia is doing right now. So.
All right. Well, if you're visiting in summer, which I think a lot of people do, I would definitely plan to attend some sort of Japanese summer festival.
Okay.
So we have different festivals, like traditional festivals, such as Bon Odori festivals, and not so traditional, but a lot of fun fireworks festivals. And, fireworks festivals occur all over Japan, even in smaller cities, and they are just wonderful displays of fireworks. unlike anything that I've experienced, even living in America.
Amazing.
You could attend the festival just about any weekend in July or August. Great. And I think attending a festival and being out with the crowds, it takes a little bit of courage to get out there with such a large crowd, but you'll find that it will be an experience that you won't forget.
Do the festivals kind of differ locally depending on different areas? Do they have like different themes and different kind of vibes to them?
Yeah, there are definitely, like in the summer, there are definitely specific types of festivals, but they might have a different spin depending on the part of Japan you're in. So even if you've come to Japan several times, it's always good, I think, to find a local festival to attend.
And have you got any more highlights for our listeners, Todd? So anything else?
Well, I definitely think that people visiting Japan should enjoy an onsen hot spring experience.
Yeah, of course.
I know many people are reluctant to try it. It can be a bit of a culture shock, I think, sharing a bath with strangers. But I really encourage people to try it at least one time. Nowadays, there are more and more facilities around Japan that allow visitors who have tattoos to use the onsen. So that's the very good change from the past.
Yeah, because that's fairly recent, isn't it? I think previously it was, wasn't it sort of designed to stop Yakuza members from using onsen?
That's right. And I think more and more Japanese facilities are understanding that there's a big difference between those types of people and tourists coming from overseas. So they're becoming a lot more lenient about those things.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, so I would definitely try an onsen. If you really can't share it with someone else, there are many facilities that allow you to rent a private bath. Again, this is perfect if you're a bit shy, or even places that don't allow tattoos in the public bath. It would not have the same restrictions for you if you use the private bath. So it's a great way to try the onsen.
Okay, that's good to know.
Would you have any advice on like kind of taking your first onsen? Like, you know, is there kind of a do's and don'ts? Do you need to be kind of sensitive to anything culturally?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a set of rules that you need to follow when you go into onsen about how to prepare yourself before you go into the bath. And you have to be completely clean before you actually go into the hot springs itself. So there's washing areas and that sort of thing. But all of those rules are easily available now in English, I think because so many visitors do want to try it. So it shouldn't be difficult for visitors to Japan to learn how to prepare to take an onsen bath and to make a good experience of it.
That's great. And any other kind of must do things in Japan?
One other thing I would encourage people to do is actually to make something. So there are many traditional craft making experiences offered in all over Japan. For example, you could do indigo dyeing or make washi paper. There are ceramics. You can even make your own little bottle of soy sauce.
Oh, lovely. Mm.
And I think, you know, this is just one of those things that you can do in Japan where you can create a really unique memory and also have kind of a handmade souvenir you can take home with you that's special.
Yeah, that's lovely.
What's the most memorable thing you've made, Todd?
Recently, my wife and I participated in a workshop where we did kind of the last stage of making a bottle of sake. And that was pretty unique. There's not a lot of places where you can actually do something like that. So we bottled our own sake and brought it home, and it was a fantastic way to celebrate and enjoy memories of our trip together.
And was it good? Was what you made worth drinking?
Well, next time, I think I'll just buy what the shop offers.
It's about the memories, Todd, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's about the memories.
It's that count. Yeah. Right.
Todd, obviously, there are so many diverse, beautiful landscapes to explore in Japan. You've got mountains, forests, coastline. If people want to get out of the cities and have more of an adventure, where should they go?
That's a great question. I'm going to start with Tokyo, since I live in the Tokyo area. So I think from Tokyo, many people head to the Shonan coastline, about an hour and a half from Tokyo to hit the beach. There's a lot of opportunities there for surfing or sunbathing or just even just people watching. And one of the things that's a real treat from Shonan is that you might, on a nice day, get treated to an outstanding view of Mount Fuji from the beach as well.
Nice.
If you prefer to go trekking or maybe head up to the mountains, there's a couple of great day trips to some small mountains from Tokyo. You can take a train only about an hour from central Tokyo, and you can go to Mount Takao in western Tokyo, or Mount Oyama, which is in the neighboring prefecture, Kanagawa, in the city of Isehara. And both of these mountains have these really beautiful shrines on them that kind of destinations for as you hike up the mountains. So you get this beautiful forested trail, and you also get this nice destination at the end where you can enjoy the view.
Mm.
If you are in the Osaka or Kyoto area, there's this village. It's almost like a dreamscape called Kayabuki no Sato in the Miyama area north of Kyoto City. And if you can imagine these beautiful thatched roof houses, this village has the biggest collection of these traditional thatched roof houses in all of Japan. And it really just looks like something right out of history, especially beautiful during the fall season when the trees turn autumn colors.
Mm.
And so I would recommend heading up that way. But in general, I think if you purchase a Japan Rail Pass, you can take the Shinkansen bullet train many places, and the bullet train can get quite far from the city in an hour or two. So almost anything can become a day trip with the rail pass. And I encourage people to go out and explore, you know, some of these smaller cities or places. Yeah, you don't have to know a lot about them. Just hop on the train, go out there. And the great thing about the Shinkansen is that it runs on a regular schedule. So you'll have no problems getting back to Tokyo or Osaka or Kyoto when you're done. And so just go out and explore.
That's a great tip, yeah.
I was going to ask about trains because obviously Japan is world famous for having great an amazing rail network and stuff.
Yeah, and it's really, it's so convenient and so easy with the rail pass because, you know, basically it's all you can travel for a given period of time. And so people should really use it to its full extent.
And it sounds very quiet as well, unless you're with Americans in the carriage. Obviously, don't hang out near Todd on the train. Is there somewhere you consider Japan's best kept secret that you're willing to share with listeners, Todd?
So it's not so much of a secret as it is a misconception. And so I kind of want to talk about Fukushima Prefecture here.
Okay.
Fukushima, I think, deserves a special mention simply because whenever it's talked about in the Western media, it's always from a negative perspective.
Yes.
And I think, first of all, Fukushima Prefecture is a very large prefecture that stretches from the mountains all the way to the coastline. And only a very small part of the prefecture was actually affected by and even restricted from the nuclear power plant disaster, which happened in 2011. Second, I think a huge amount of effort has gone into the cleanup and rebuilding around the accidents area. In 2020, the closest towns to the accident were reopened for residents to move back in. And that same year, the Great East Japan Earthquake and Nuclear Disaster Memorial Museum was opened. And it's just a few kilometers from the decommissioned plant.
Oh, interesting.
And so I was able to go on something called Hope Tourism Fukushima, where I visited the museum and also other sites related to the disaster, including an elementary school, which was destroyed by the tsunami. But it actually was good because the staff and the students made some very smart choices and were able to evacuate and got to high ground before the tsunami came. So there were no casualties at that school. But just being able to be out there and see that people are trying to return to that area, they're creating some art projects to encourage the residents who are returning. But the area really does need tourism to be able to fully recover. And a lot of people shun Fukushima, even places that were not affected by the disaster, simply because of the name association, right? And it's very unfair, I think. So you can go into the mountains. There's Aizu Wakamatsu, which is a mountain castle town. It has a very rich samurai history and a beautiful castle. There's the Bandai Azuma Skyline, which is a scenic mountain drive. It has some of the most beautiful autumn foliage landscape for an area in Japan. And the Soma Nomaoi Festival, which is a unique thousand-year-old festival that features wild horses. And these are really special things that you can only see in Fukushima. And people are really missing out if they don't go there because they're afraid or because they've heard some misinformation about Fukushima. So I just want to encourage listeners, you know, it's quite easy to get to Fukushima using the Japan Rail Pass and taking the Shinkansen. So please explore Fukushima and see that it's just a really beautiful place and it has a lot to offer.
Yeah, it sounds it.
That's a really good point, Todd. I think a lot of the time people associate headlines with certain places rather than actually looking beyond it into what can be experienced there. So it's a really lovely note to end this section on. Mm-hmm. And now let's take a quick look at some of the present of Japan, given it's only just reopened quite recently, and what visitors can expect in the future too. Japan is a land of contrast. Think tranquil zen gardens and peaceful pagodas, neon-drenched cities and futuristic robot restaurants. Whatever your dream trip entails, your DK Eyewitness Japan guide is the perfect companion. Find DK Eyewitness Japan in your local bookshop or via the link in our episode bio.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So Todd, and we touched on it a little bit earlier, but it's only quite recently that restrictions have been lifted and visitors are now able to freely travel around Japan. Are you noticing tourism coming back in full force?
Oh, yes. We definitely saw that tourism is back in full force, especially around cherry blossom season this year.
Of course.
But unfortunately, it seems that tourists have reverted to their old habits.
Okay.
And so the big cities, the major destinations like Tokyo, Kyoto, and Osaka, you know, are still receiving the bulk of foreign visitors. And even some places like Mount Fuji are already experiencing the effects of over-tourism, and there's actually been some restrictions that had to be put in place for the number of hikers climbing Mount Fuji recently. I guess as a writer, you know, I'm focused on off-the-beaten-path destinations, so I really want to encourage listeners to get out to the smaller cities and the countryside and to really experience the full extent of what Japan has to offer.
Because I guess slightly touching on how you're talking about in the last section with Fukushima as well, you know, other areas of Japan will need tourism. It's helpful to help local economies, but also I guess places have been closed for the past couple of years as well. So whereas over tourism coming back is a problem for the bigger sites, actually some places have had to deal with no tourism, or I don't know if there's been like kind of a lot of domestic tourism in the last couple of years, but
yeah, fortunately in Japan, I think domestic tourism helps sustain a lot of places. I think the places that have suffered the most are those who really catered to foreign tourists. And we're seeing that, I think, a lot in that a lot of facilities that used to have staff that spoke different languages like English or other languages lost those resources because of the pandemic. And they're still struggling, I think, to find resources to support other languages.
So Todd, obviously you've mentioned summer briefly and you've mentioned cherry blossom season. When is the best time to visit, would you say?
Well, I guess it depends on what you consider the best time to visit. So I think for the best weather, probably late March to late May, or late September to late November. So basically spring and fall are the best times for weather in Japan. But of course, because the weather is so nice, that can get quite crowded too. And also in early May, Japan has something called Golden Week, which the entire country has off, and it feels like the entire country is traveling during that week. So I don't recommend that first week in May for visitors to come to Japan.
That's good to know.
It can be quite hectic already with domestic tourists. Things are pretty much fully booked and very expensive. So avoid that week. So if you want to avoid crowds, if you want maybe to come in the off season, I kind of recommend early September, maybe after the kids have returned to school. The weather is still nice. It's the tail end of the typhoon season, but generally there's not much typhoon action, not a lot of rain that period. So, and September is nice. And December to March is winter in Japan. It's still a great time to come, especially if you love winter sports. Japan has great powder snow for people who love to ski or snowboard. Again, the only time I might avoid in that period is around the New Year's holiday, because New Year's in Japan is kind of like a Christmas holiday in the West. There's a lot of family-related gatherings and things are closed. So it can be a little bit difficult for visitors during that time.
Sure.
Great stuff. And I mean, for listeners, Japan is quite an expensive country to visit. It's one of the most expensive countries in the world. Do you have any sort of top tips for travelers on a budget?
Sure. Actually, I think it's almost a misconception at this point that Japan is one of the most expensive countries in the world. Especially recently, the yen is weak against foreign currencies. And inflation has been very low in Japan for decades now. And so in some ways, Japan seems much cheaper than other first world nations. I know when we go back to visit family and friends in America, it's always a relief to come back to Japan because things in America have gotten so expensive recently. Of course, when you eat out in Japan, there's no tipping. And the tax is often included in the price that you see on the menu. When you go out to eat in America, when you add the tax and tip, it can easily add 30% to what you see on the menu. So
no surprises there.
So, yeah, I think right now, in particular, Japan just doesn't feel that expensive. It's quite a bargain for some people. Now, that said, if you're on a budget, you want to save some money, the cities, of course, are always more expensive than the rural areas. So I'm going to pound on this point some more and say, get off the beaten track and out into the rural areas. There are many ways that you can enjoy rural areas, such as farm stay experiences or family-owned guest houses that are very affordable. And they often include home-cooked meals, which I think are the best meals you can get in Japan.
Amazing.
And speaking of food and eating out, I think people often feel like they need to go to these very expensive restaurants in Japan and have this really great meal. But the quality of food, even at modest restaurants, is pretty high in Japan. I don't think you'd be disappointed eating at a moderately priced restaurant. So don't feel like you have to splurge on every meal. And if you do want to splurge, I recommend if they offer a lunch menu that you should do a lunch rather than a dinner, because the lunch menu in Japan is a fraction of the cost of the dinner menu. And maybe the selection is smaller, or the portion smaller, but you're going to get the same quality meal at the same restaurant. So that's one great way to save some money if you're eating out and you'd like to eat something nice.
Yeah, that's really good to know.
That's a great tip. Thanks, Todd.
So just to wrap us up, Todd, so one final question for you. This season, we're particularly thinking about how travel can benefit the local community. And you've touched on this in some parts, but what are the best ways to support the local community, would you say, when visiting Japan?
Yeah, so I've been working on some what we call sustainable tourism projects recently. Mm. And part of the sustainable tourism concept in Japan is how can tourism contribute to sustaining local economies and also traditions? Because in many places in Japan, traditions are dying out. And this is because, as you know, the population of Japan is aging. Mm. There are fewer and fewer young people being born. And so you have these artists and craftspeople who are getting upwards in age, and they have nobody to take over their work, partly because there are fewer young people in Japan, and partly because young people can't see a future. They can't see how they can make a living doing these things. Mm. So it's really important. Tourism plays such a huge role in sustaining these traditions by bringing tourists out to these areas where they're doing these traditional crafts and making it possible for people to make a living doing these types of crafts. And so, again, the first and foremost thing that people can do to help is to get off the beaten path, to get out to the rural areas, to get out to the small cities. When you have a choice, avoid the chain stores, the chain restaurants, hotels, and choose the local, the local businesses. And of course, small businesses and service providers. If you're taking a tour, for example, you could go out to one of the big websites right now and book an experience tour somewhere. But it might be with a big company. But yet there are so many small tourist service providers out there. And a lot of them are offering really innovative services that you won't find if you just go out and click on the first thing you find, on the big websites. So, do a little work, a little search, and you'll probably find some really interesting things in the areas that you're going to visit.
That's great advice. Yeah, put in some research, kind of find those interesting things, and it'll probably make your trip richer as well in terms of like doing something a bit different, finding something different to the kind of normal expectation of Japan too, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I've just met some really amazing people, some really amazing entrepreneurs who are trying to do these unusual and innovative things in Japan. And I feel that they really need to be encouraged by having tourists come and support what they're doing. And that's the only way they're going to survive.
That's a brilliant note to end on, Todd. So I think you've given us a really fantastic snapshot of Japan. And it's been a real pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much, Todd.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
So thanks once again to Todd. What a fantastic guest. I think we said it at the start of the episode, Zoe, but it's so difficult to get the whole of Japan into one episode.
Yeah.
I thought Todd gave it a good go.
Absolutely.
And hopefully, listener, you've got plenty of food for thought to plan that all-important trip to Japan. So if you want to kind of follow some of Todd's work, you can do so at peraperapera.net and voyapon.com. And obviously, all listeners should look out for that new edition of Be More Japan coming. When is it coming, Zoe?
It's March 2024, so not long away.
Not that far away at all. Yeah. And well done, Zoe, your first time hosting the podcast. How did you find it?
Yeah, it was great. It was great to join you, James.
Really enjoyed your company today.
Thanks.
So until next time, it's goodbye from me, listener.
And goodbye from me.
And we shall see you very soon. Where to Go is a podcast from DKI Witness. It was produced by Julia Baker, presented by Zoe Rutland and James Atkinson with the help of Bella Talbot. For more information about DKI Witness, follow us on social media at DKI Witness or visit dk.com/iWitness. Please like and follow the show, and if you have time, leave a review. Your support means so much to us.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.